Welcome to Insights for Manufacturing, a podcast that supports the UK manufacturing sector. Hosted by Jeff Beecham, the manufacturer's recruiter. Hello and welcome to Insights for Manufacturing. I'm delighted to welcome my guest today, Keith Ridgway, OBE and CBE, who is Senior Executive for Manufacturing at the University of Strathclyde. Welcome to the show, Keith. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Very well, thanks. Okay.
Good, good. Glad you could join me. So you've covered so much wonderful stuff in your career. You've been instrumental in founding and developing various manufacturing and engineering related institutions, Keith. Tell me, where did your passion for manufacturing and engineering come from?
Probably started, to be honest, Jeff, with my dad, you know, and my grandfather. My granddad was in Gorton Tank, you know, making locomotives back in the day.
Okay.
And my dad was a turner. So we had, you know, quite probably usual in that part of Manchester, we had a lathe in the shed. You know, my dad was the sort of guy who never bought anything new. He always repaired everything.
Yeah.
So you get used to it. And we, you know, we pulled cars apart and so forth and read engines. So I got into it at a fairly young age with my father. And then when I finished at UMIST, I went to Mather and Platt, which was a very traditional manufacturing company in Sheffield and Manchester at the time.
Yeah.
So I really sort of grew up in it, really. That was what happened, you know.
So it's in the blood, so to speak.
Yeah, it absolutely.
Runs in the family. Okay. Yeah. So let's start off with the Advanced Forming Research Centre. Really intrigued about the development or the initial setup and the development of this facility. I know it's based at the National Manufacturing Institute Scotland's NMIS, and it's part of the High Value Manufacturing Catapult, I believe. So can you tell us a bit more about the work that AFRC does and how it's supporting the development of UK manufacturing?
Yeah, I mean, you'd probably best to go back to the start of it, really. When the AMRC started in 2000, Rolls-Royce quite liked the model when they joined in 2004.
Yeah.
And they wanted to put a centre near their forging facility in Inchinnan, in Glasgow.
Yep.
That's what really started the AFRC. So it was, you know, forging blades, compressor blades for Rolls-Royce, and then bringing a wider community. So the whole start was the AFRC. And that's developed, you know, a very, very strong leadership. It's always global leadership in forging and forming. It's probably, in some respects, there's not as much forging and forming in Glasgow as there is in somewhere like Sheffield and the Midlands.
Yeah.
So it's been sort of fairly important that we actually have got now an outreach centre, a couple of machines down in Sheffield. But if you look at NMIS is very wide in its technologies. AFRC, very focused, forging and forming. You know, we do cold forming, hot forming, press work, super plastic forming. And I'll say without doubt, it's the best research facility in the world. You know, we just opened last week the Future Forge.
Yes.
It was 2,000 ton closed die, 1,000 ton open die. You know, it is the biggest forge in any research establishment, undoubtedly.
Yeah. State of the art.
Absolutely, yeah. And in a very important industry, you know, the problem with the forge industry is that there's always this black art.
Yeah.
You know, for years we've had a black art. If you can't understand it, it's black art. We're actually unpicking the black art, making sense of it, process modelling. And that's the important role probably in British industry and globally, is to understand forging and forming better. But it's still a very important process.
Absolutely. And it covers such a wide range of industries, doesn't it, really? You know, heavy engineering, forging, and casting, really. But, you know, we're talking about forging at the moment. There's so many, you know, structures, machine parts, componentry that is produced through the forging process. And people outside of manufacturing, and sometimes people outside of, you know, being involved directly in forging, probably it goes under the radar sometimes. You know, it's almost like a bit forgotten.
Well, you know, I think it's probably, you know, it's sort of blacksmithing, it's hot metal and hammering, you know.
Yeah.
But if you want any high integrity part, then it's got to be forged. So all your air engine components will be forged, your landing gear will be forged, nuclear reactors, you know, be forged. So knees, everything is, you know, artificial knee, new knees and medical parts, it's all forged. If you want high integrity components, the good microstructure, it's got to be forged, really.
And this, and for anybody that's not sort of into metallurgy and maybe, you know, doesn't understand the sort of the makeup of materials, if you like, this is what you're talking about. And I'm not an engineer, but my interpretation is this is all about the properties of the material. So the forging process is either it's making something stronger, it's making it more dense, it's giving it that sort of hard wearing, durable sort of property. If that's how I'm describing it in layman's terms.
Good way to explain it. I mean, it's working the material, taking any faults and, you know, micro cracks out of it, it's changing the properties of the microstructure.
Yeah.
It's making it very strong, you know, and that's why it's using these high integrity components.
Yeah. So AFRC, a really important part of what's going on right now in UK manufacturing, but also we need this expertise and we need the sort of skill. We'll go on to skills in a bit, but we need the sort of forging knowledge, the know-how and the, you know, the skills coming into industry to keep up with what the demands of our country are going to be in the future as well. We can't get by without forging, can we?
No, absolutely not. No, it's been around forever and it'll be around forever, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And it's almost intrinsically linked with things, you know, like nuclear power and, you know, defense or aerospace. That's where you find forgings.
So going back to the National Manufacturing Institute Scotland, NMIS, I know they recently won Architectural Excellence and Development of the Year Awards at the Scottish Property Awards. Can you tell us about your involvement at NMIS, Keith, and what impact, you know, is NMIS having on the development and success of UK manufacturing?
So I took over AFRC in 2016.
Yeah.
And, you know, up in Glasgow, and you went out to meet a number of local companies and say, are you working with the AFRC? No, never heard of it. And it was the best kept secret in Scotland. That was, you know, that was because its partners were, you know, Boeing, Rolls-Royce, Bifrangi from Italy, Simet in the US, the global companies. But working with local companies or regional companies in Scotland, it wasn't having an impact, really, to be honest. So we thought what we needed was a wider ranging facility. And at that time, you could see coming forward was digital, was having a bigger impact, data analytics.
Yeah.
And so forth. So we said, really, we needed three things. We need a digital factory in the future, which would bring and demonstrate and be able to build digital enabled processes. We need a skills academy because there was a lack of people with those sort of skills in industry at the time. And in all these places, the most valuable thing you can have is a space with nothing in it. And we call it a collaboratory.
Yes.
And that's where you can bring parts in or process in from a company and set them up and fail quick, you know, and improve it and go again and have space to do things and trial things. So it was the intention was that would have the three things. Now, the other thing that we wanted in Scotland and the Scottish government, and fair play to them really, was they wanted to have an iconic building to say, Scotland's about manufacturing, we're supporting manufacturing. And so that was a big factor. And we're right near the airport, we're really handy for the airport, possibly too near the airport for taxi drivers. So get a £2 trip, you know.
Yeah.
But we're right near the airport, we've got a good catchment area around Glasgow. So we're in a good position. The building is purple to represent the heather of Scotland. We've got, I don't know how many solar panels, you know, we're BREEAM excellent. We take waste heat for our heating system.
Yeah.
It's very open, very airy. We're just about in time with COVID to adjust the internal a bit to make it more post-COVID friendly. So more meeting rooms and meeting spaces. So it's a very nice building to work in, you know, the work environment. Absolutely tremendous, you know. This is about the fourth, fifth building that I've been involved having a say in the design of it. And I think they say if you every time you build a house, you improve on the design. And I think it's a bit the same, really. You know, NMIS is, I think, the best building we've ever built. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And what is NMIS involved in at the moment that's of note that you know that may be of interest to the wider manufacturing listeners? You know, what are you sort of what have you got your teeth stuck into at the moment at NMIS?
Quite a lot of remanufacturing. That's
okay.
A growing area. Remanufacturing, reworking, recycling. That's becoming a big area.
Yeah.
In Scotland, particularly around aerospace. You know,
okay.
Taking aerospace components and reworking them. Quite a lot around machining. Probably our most prolific thing at the moment is discrete event simulation, modelling new factory layouts.
Yeah.
People are starting to think about more productive factories, moving to better, you know, more modern workspaces than they'd had before.
Yeah.
Joint innovation district. So quite a lot of work on discrete event simulation, modelling, social modelling of the work streams. A lot of work through the Manufacturing Skills Academy on upgrading digital skills with people.
Okay.
Helping to understand, you know, companies that collect data, what they can do with that data.
Yeah.
So those sort of projects. But and then a few lightweighting projects, composite recycling. Lightweighting projects are interesting, you know, reducing the weight of things like foundation beds on machines on ships.
Okay.
So actually, you know, reduce the weight on those. Super plastic form is a big thing with the forging centre as well.
Yep.
You know, it's a big area that, for us. So quite a lot of projects. Probably one of the most successful ones we did was with one of the whiskey companies.
Yep.
Which was increasing the fill rate of the barrels and increasing the amount you can put in a barrel. And we could get an extra 5% in with building digital twins. And
yep.
5% when you you fill a million barrels is a big saving in barrels.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's a big saving in, you know, it's a big saving in storage space for 12,
yeah.
16 years, you know.
Yeah.
So you've very, very low cost project and a very big impact.
And a lot of distilleries in Scotland. So I guess
there's
a huge potential for that to be rolled out.
That's it. I'm going to try and sample them all, to be honest.
I'll be there with you, I think. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So moving slightly more southerly from Scotland down to Wales, you're also still chair of Industry Wales, I believe.
Yeah.
The high value manufacturing catapult office in Baglan is actually the seed for a new National Manufacturing Institute Wales. Is that right?
It is, yeah.
Okay, so how's that come about then? And what are the sort of main aims for, you know, the Welsh manufacturing?
Well, when I was at AMRC, we started the AMRC company up at Broughton.
Yeah.
I was really to support Airbus and Wing of Tomorrow. And then also brought in a lot of work around local SMEs. A lot of them are in that area of food and drink, although there's potential for nuclear, you know, going forward.
Yeah.
Not a lot in the south, but there's a lot of smaller innovation assets. I think it was about 47 of at one time around Wales, scattered around Wales. But very no catapult other than the one in the Broughton.
Yeah.
So when you look at catapult funding going into the regions, you've got, you know, probably around about 20 million going to Scotland, of 140 million of catapult money, you know, the rest more or less goes into England.
Yeah.
In Ireland, you've got the Innovative Manufacturing Centre being set up. So we'll end up, you know, very shortly with basically a National Manufacturing Institute in Ireland, Northern Ireland. We'll have one in Scotland. We'll have a number of catapults in England, and we'll have nothing in Wales. So the idea was, well, Wales needs to get more innovation funding in. It needs a focus to bring all the assets together.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the main industrial areas, obviously, is that South Wales, Neath Port Talbot area. And back was a site that was available. So Catapult have put a temporary site, starter site there, which all the Catapult centres can use. But ultimately, the intention is we will go to the National Manufacturing Institute of Wales and, you know, perhaps become a redesigned Catapult, one of the major centres.
Yeah. And there's a lot of potential for, you know, growth in manufacturing in Wales, isn't there? I mean, it's, you know, often, yeah, places like the Northwest, the Midlands in England. You've got, you know, pockets in the northeast. You know, they're normally considered as the big sort of hives, if you like, of industry. But you know, Wales has got some fantastic heritage for manufacturing. Sadly, we've had some announcements recently about, you know, the steel making news. But you know, there's a lot of good stuff in Wales already, and crikey, you know, there's enough space there to set up quite a few more manufacturing facilities. Yeah. I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it does very well on things like food and drink.
Yeah,
very well in. But if you know, and it's got two economies really, the northeast that goes into the Merseyside area. A lot of people work in Merseyside, and down in the southwest, you've got northwest, northeast, and southeast. You've got into the, you know, the Bristol, Bath, Gloucester area around that gateway.
Yeah,
but then in Wales, you're around that south coast area. You've got the heavy engineering around Port Talbot, but you've got massive potential for the, you know, the Celtic Sea and offshore renewable energy.
Yes,
carbon capture, you know, storage down in the south. You've got probably one of the best nuclear sites up in Wilver. So that, you know, the potential to develop a supply chain in Wales, and the, you know, the skills you've had in Wales for many years, the heavy engineering skills, there's great potential there. You know, the danger is if we don't get our act together in Wales, you know, you build Wilver and all you get is a cafe on the A5. You know, we need to ensure that we get the supply chain into North Wales.
Yeah, absolutely. So how far is this down the road of, so this HVM office has been set up? I mean, are there any sort of timescales, you know, being bandied around, you know, about having a National Manufacturing Institute Wales, or are there any, you know, firm commitments to that? Or
well, it's been announced that we will have it.
Okay.
Announced, they said they will have an animal, they will move to it. It's how fast it moves.
Yeah.
And we've got probably in the first years of a 5-year, maybe the second year now, of a 5-year commitment to Catapult. But things, you know, things could change drastically in the election. And, you know, they may go more regional with the Catapults, in which case it could accelerate things. So I guess we may be about 5 years away from having a fully operational National Manufacturing Institute of Wales. But, you know, say an election may accelerate that by 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Keith, I know one of your other passions is the reinvestment into UK heavy engineering. And as I sort of alluded to earlier, you know, we've all heard about the closures at Tata Steel, but you know, it's not just steel making that we need to sustain and invest in, is it? You know, what are the impacts today for the future of the decline in our wider heavy engineering heritage, Keith?
I mean, heavy engineering is intrinsically linked to climate change.
Yeah.
So if you, you know, if you want to go to climate change, we want nuclear power, you know, specifically, that's heavy engineering. And that's mainly focused around the north, so Sheffield and maybe up into the northeast. If you look at wind turbines, floating offshore wind, you're talking of floaters. Each floater will be probably three cylinders, 35 metres high, 25 metres diameter, you know, 6 or 8 inch plate. You mix the units up there, but that's the way I think, really. You know, where have we got that capability to bend and weld that steel? Mm-hmm. Where are we going to get the steel from? Where are we getting the steel for the nuclear reactors? You know, defence, we're building up, you know, with AUKUS, the submarines.
Yes.
Programmes are going up. So heavy engineering is very much back on the agenda, but we lost a lot of it. You know, we lost a lot in particularly the north. And that move to finance and services away from heavy engineering, the price was paid by the north of England, you know, Wales and Scotland, that paid that price, losing those industries. And, you know, I mentioned right at the start, you know, my grandfather was at Gorton Tanker, making some of the biggest locomotives in the world in the time, you know. And then we had Doncaster and things at Derby, and we lost all that. And we replaced it with, you know, Hitachi and Siemens and so forth. But a lot of these, you know, we're screwdriver industries, really. We're assembling things that have been made outside. We should never have let our train industry go, and we should invest in it, and we should invest now. And it'll be the same in defence. You know, we need big investments in defence.
Yeah.
And you can see that happening now. People are getting nervous, and we'll start to invest more.
Yeah, I suppose it was good news for, you know, our sort of defence manufacturing, you know, with the the MOD stepping in and, you know, taking Sheffield Forge Masters in-house, if you like. You know, we've just got to have that capability, especially with all the geopolitical stuff that's going on around the globe. Yeah, it's pretty scary thinking that, you know, if push comes to shove and we need to look after ourselves better in whatever shape or form that is, we need skills to do that, skills and capability. So it's not just feeding ourselves and building cars and, you know, the nice things that people want. It's looking after ourselves as a country, as a collective, you know, and that means defending ourselves, being able to communicate, infrastructure. Yeah, it's just, it's not just about today. It's about tomorrow, isn't it? All the time. And we're playing catch up now, aren't we, for all those things that we've lost?
Yeah, I mean, it's national security, defence, and it's energy security.
Yeah.
We have to, you know, if the lights go out, people get very unhappy. We know that.
Yeah.
And
chaos.
It's absolutely chaos. And I think we don't realise sometimes that when we talk about energy, we confuse it with electricity. You know, and it's sort of like about 20% of it is electricity.
Yeah.
But the other energy, domestic heating, vehicles, all that type of thing is, you know, if we go to electric cars, we need more and more electric power, which is more and more nuclear power stations or more offshore and more grid connections, more transformers.
Yeah.
These are big, heavy engineering jobs, you know. And we've lost, you know, on the nuclear, it's interesting, we're in a position with Forge Masters, thanks to the MOD investment, to really support the nuclear island. But, you know, when I was younger, I was at Kendy and Donkin in Manchester, you know, we worked with Parsons steam turbines up in the northeast and GE and Metrovix down in Trafford Park, which was, you know, fantastic place. They've gone.
Yeah.
But we'll be buying turbines from Germany or Sweden because we let those industries go. You know, we should not have done it.
Yeah.
And I was saying to somebody just a couple of weeks ago, when I finished university, within 12 miles, you know, we had Metrovix GE, we had Broadheath, we had Kearns Richards, we had so many companies around, you know, around the area I lived within 12 miles.
Yeah.
They're all gone now.
Yeah.
All heavy engineering.
Yeah, it's a shame. All the more reason for, you know, for us to keep having this conversation and talking it up, talking up the need and stoking up the passion for it, really. And talking about passions, another one of yours is, you know, it's future skills and training. We know the UK is, you know, way, way off, you know, meeting the skills needs over the short term, let alone the, you know, the medium and the long term. So how would you describe the sort of reality and the urgency of that skills gap then, Keith, in terms of, well, heavy engineering or, you know, across the board in manufacturing?
I mean, it's very hard to be optimistic about it, to be honest.
That's true.
I mean, the number of engineers coming out and just taking apprenticeships isn't keeping up with the number of people retiring, you know, going into those sort of industries. So I think it was about 59,000 a year short of what we need. But if you start talking of nuclear and offshore, talking about 40,000 welders and things like that, which we're not doing.
Yeah.
Sheffield, we've 7,000 people who are, you know, skilled forgers. And 50% of those we lose in the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And we can see no pipeline, you know. And then if you look at all those things, that those are traditional industries where we're losing people because it's not quite as attractive as it was, then you've got electric vehicles coming through, you've got hydrogen, you know, you've got all these new technologies, offshore renewables and so forth, solar panels. You've got new jobs, you've got digital, more and more digital, robotics, you know, more and more automations. You've got lots and lots of jobs being created that are new jobs and still lots of old jobs. You still need turners, fitters, welders.
Yeah.
So we've got a severe problem. And I think we've got to change very fundamentally the way we train. So we're not going to meet it from the 16, 17-year-olds. I mean, they're great, yet encourage 16, 17-year-olds into industry.
Yep.
But I think we're going to have to do a lot of retraining, reskilling, upskilling, maybe thinking more like the dilutee programs they did during the Second World War, where you train people perhaps to do butt welds or saddle welds, not complete welders, and gradually change over time.
Yeah.
Think a little bit differently, you know. So
you can plug the gaps that are needed rather than teaching a sort of broad curriculum, or and then you're a, you know, you're a broad brush welder, or you know, you're a an expert in all of these things. It's training people for the gaps that we've got now, and then maybe sort of adding to those
Yeah,
moving
absolutely.
forward.
Things are changing. I mean, we talk about future skills. We probably don't even know what they are, you know. I mean, as I finished in 70, the university in 73, and we say Mathers, we had quite a big drawing office, and we used slide rules. We didn't have calculators till later on, And I remember a guy we had. We went for lunch, and he came back and he called everybody over. He said, I put this number in my calculator before, and Luke, it still remembered it. But we hadn't, we hadn't, and all those things, CNC machines, automation, robotics have all come in, and nothing's been taken out of engineering courses. They change, and it'll change over the next 50 years. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, well, some of the you know, some of the kids that are in school at the moment, in primary school and sort of early sort of senior school, will end up doing jobs with perhaps manufacturing processes that haven't even been invented yet, you know, with new materials. You know, it's mind-boggling to know. I never thought about that, you know, when I left school, or even since then, up until recently. Because I think it's the sheer pace of technology, isn't it? You know, the last sort of 25 years, I think there's been a, you know, almost like a
Exponential.
vertical
Yeah,
shift.
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we've not even talked about photonics, quantum, engineering, biology. These are things that were just starting to arise, space and satellites, more and more jobs being created. We'd never have thought of these things probably 10, 15 years ago.
Absolutely. But going back to what you said earlier, though, despite the technological advancements and these new, you know, processes and technologies, we still need heavy engineering. We still need you know, some of the older and traditional skills and manufacturing processes. We're not just going to be able to go, you know, you can't just go digital with everything. We still need,
No,
you know,
sorry.
we're still going to need CNC machining. We're still going to need welding and forging and bending and all these sort of things. And maybe, and I'm a big fan of technology, by the way. I love automation and robotics, and I do think that must play a part in plugging some of the skills gaps that we've got across the country. Because without that, I think we're definitely snookered. But I think sometimes there's too big an emphasis on modern technology, and I think that's pushing maybe the youngsters, the parents, some of the schools, that that's where it all needs to be. Where, well, actually no, we can't get rid of the stuff we've been using for the last 50 to 100 years. We still need all of that. So I guess it's like anything in life and business, it's about balance, isn't it? You know, how do you make sure that you've still got the skill, enough skills in the right places? It's all right, everybody chasing this golden goose or the next golden goose, whatever it might be. You know, there's AI, there's, as you say, electric vehicles and renewables, and there'll be something else in another 10 years' time and something else after that. But we still need to be, you know, people have been building things on this planet for thousands of years, haven't they? You know, you go back to the pyramids and, you know, before that. And in another 200 years, we'll still be building things. So we've got to
We're
stay a little
people.
bit grounded, haven't we, in you know,
Absolutely.
basic engineering principles.
Yeah, I mean, renewables, very exciting, but plate bending, welding, forging, gear cutting the cells and electric motor drives and massive big carbon fiber and glass fiber blades that also have got to be at some point taken down and destroyed or recycled, So all these things just continue, but you get developments, but nothing drops off the bottom end, Nothing replaces forging, doesn't replace welding, It's still there,
Absolutely.
a lot of it. So no, we have neglected heavy engineering, and as I keep saying, the north of England's paid the price. And when you talk about leveling up and all these things, when we lost the pits and so forth in the north and around Yorkshire, it was the other supply chain industries, other heavy engineering that was around that went to the north. And the skills that went, So it has badly damaged the north of England, but it will come, it'll have to come back. We'll have to, build up our energy resilience, really.
Yeah.
And indeed, our supply chain resilience, the way things are going, we need to make much more in the UK. And you can see that in the
Absolutely.
US, with the Inflation Reduction Act in the US that Biden brought in, a lot of reshoring of American work, and it's had a massive impact in the Rust Belt. And
Yeah.
that's the sort of thing that we need to do in the UK, really.
Absolutely, 100% behind that. I'm, pleased to feel and to know, I suppose, that reshoring it is actually a thing. 10, 15 years ago, there was talk about, oh, it'd be nice to bring more UK manufacturing back, but it's all a bit of a pipe dream. We're actually seeing it, aren't we? It is happening, and I suppose part of that has been because of COVID and the Suez Canal thing, and now we got the Red Sea situation with supply chain disruption. I think it's the reset button that was needed, and long may that continue. The bringing back of UK manufacturing. Let's try and do more ourselves. We need global trade, of course we do. But I do think this is only my opinion. Others will have other views, but I do think we probably need to be a little bit more protectionist. Not totally, but we do need to look after ourselves first before we try looking after others, And yeah, a big part of our economy is built around manufacturing, So
And
so talk.
steel's a very useful material. We forget we have titanium and we have all sorts of other alloys, but steel's still very good. And the closure of Port Talbot blast furnaces will become the only
Yeah.
Western country without primary steel manufacture. That's really got to be addressed at some point.
What's the answer? I mean, that's a whole conversation in itself. I personally, I can't fathom how that's been let to happen. I'm really stuffed for answers. It's not just a shame, but we need it, And I think it opens the door to other similar scenarios, doesn't it? Of a negative connotation, that's gone. So what's next? We need to stop the rot, if I can put it like that, and do more investment in the big heavy industry. So like as you say, we need steel. It's no good importing all of it. I know we do make some other types of steels, but yeah, it's not good. We need to get behind it, and yeah, I think they're good. Let's go on to the next question, because there is a link here. I was going to say it's down to the government to get behind things. So without going too political, because this isn't a political podcast, we are in a general election year, and UK manufacturing, predominantly SMEs, they've been calling for a specific Minister of Manufacturing and an industrial strategy for the last few years. And it seems that to be heard in government, no matter who's in power, it's an ongoing struggle for UK manufacturing. But I think maybe recently there have been a few glimmers of hope about an industrial strategy. Whether we get one or not, remains to be seen. What's your view on this, Keith? Do we need a Minister for Manufacturing? And what's the most compelling reasons why the UK desperately needs an industrial strategy?
Well, I do think we need an industrial strategy, and definitely, I'm not sure about a minister of manufacturing. I think the problem is, and in past times, we had local MPs who worked at Sheffield Forge Masters. Most of the local lads around here, MPs, had worked in industry in Sheffield.
Yeah.
Went through the shop steward. I mean, we're a labour area, but I'm not being political at all. But I've been through shop stewards and the unions, and then gone on to become MPs and so forth, local council MPs. They've been through that route, and they've been through, they've been in heavy industry and so forth, and they understood manufacturing. But I think we've got to a situation now where a lot of our politicians have been through Oxbridge and then become researchers and then become basically professional politicians.
Yeah.
We can see that right the way through. So we lack that grounding in industry. So why would we need a manufacturer, a Ministry of Manufacturing? Well, it would be great to have that voice, but we could have that voice by having more people who'd been through manufacturing industry and been on the shop floor
Yes.
and done proper jobs. The danger would be that we get a Minister of Manufacturing who's been through Eton and then Oxford and done philosophy and becomes the Minister of Manufacturing, which would be the worst of all scenarios. So I think, having a stronger voice in Parliament of people who've actually had manufacturing experience and worked in industry would be fantastic. I think that's the issue there. And industrial strategy, I do think we need industrial strategy because we need to look at, if we want to make, 60 or 70% of our offshore renewable energy components, we want to make them in the UK, then somebody needs to say, well, that, yeah, and be looking at, how do we get there? What components are they? Where do we get the steel from? Where do we get the, where's the industry that can do that? And where should we invest? And do we need to make strategic decisions? And what should we not bother about? What should we say, well, we'll import that. It's low cost, low value. We need to be a high value manufacturing, high knowledge based in economy. I don't think you can do that by just letting the market force basically and people who run businesses for business sake just take the lead. You go down their profit route, really. I think undoubtedly we need industrial strategy. There is some voices I've heard say that breaking the industrial strategy into a number of strategies like space strategy and offshore renewable strategy and so forth, energy strategy, having they're all there, the industrial strategy there, it's just broken up so there can be more announcements. But I think you have to really bring everything together and say, look, this is the package we've got, this is what we're looking at, this is what we need, and not
There'll be
just a wish.
stronger links like that, won't there? If it's all, one cohesive, overarching strategy, everything's sort of linked up. I think splitting it up like that, it does leave you open to things, battling against each other. Different parts have got different agendas, and I think it needs to be a whole.
You go to the different meetings and they're saying the same thing. We need skills. We need skills in nuclear, we need skills in energy. Well, yeah, we bring everything together and then we look at what we have got and where have we got skills, where have we got the gaps, and where we can collaborate and where are things, the same.
Yeah,
So,
absolutely.
absolutely, and you bring in industrial strategy, you bring your skills requirements, you look at your forward skills requirements, you look at material requirements, where's your supply chain going to be? Where are you going to get things from? What can you make in UK? What investments do you need? And I think the danger is that when we see things now, manufacturing plans, it's very much a nice wish list and we want to do this, but it doesn't say actually how we do it, we're going to do. Then we got to get to that.
So lots still to do. If anybody from UK Gov is listening, UK manufacturing, we need the support, we need a strategy. So Keith, we're coming towards the end of the discussion. I wanted to find out before we sort of finish up, what are you personally currently involved with in your day-to-day work, obviously? And have you got any exciting projects in the pipeline that you can talk about?
Yeah, I'm working up in Scotland. Obviously, a lot now on in the northeast. Energy transition up in the northeast around Aberdeen. Some work in textiles around Dundee. Some very good companies around there into particularly advanced technical textiles, which is sort of a northern industry as well. In Sheffield, we're very aware of this problem in forging. The skill shortage and the where are we going to go in the future, and really trying to build a forge industry for the future. But we've got a big proposal in with the local authority on the investment fund and probably eventually into Whitehall for a forging and forming accelerator, which will be quite a big investment, probably talking of 100 million investment in total around Sheffield. And we're combining that with a small modular reactor centre of excellence. So we're trying to ensure that we sort of, what's the word, corral the small modular reactor manufacturer into the UK, and support people like Rolls-Royce to make the particular nuclear island parts, the critical high value items. So build off that,
These small modular reactors are great. I personally think they'll be, they're what we need, but we don't want to have the technology and then get it all built somewhere else for us to just assemble and commission here, do we? You know, we want to be doing that here, don't we? And that's really the tail of the tape, isn't it?
Well, we say we're number one in wind turbines. We're number one buyer. You know, yeah. We buy from Germany, Denmark. You know, that's what we do, we buy. We don't want to be number one in small modular reactors buying from the US and Germany or Korea. You know, we have the opportunity to make in the UK.
Yeah.
And they are going to, I think they are going to happen. I mean, the cost of the big reactors is 40% at least is the cost of finance.
Yeah.
If you take that out and make them more manageable, and you can put them in bits and, you know, grow them gradually, I think it becomes quite exciting. You know,
yeah.
And then you can start taking learning curve and taking time out. So I think we're one of the only places, I think there's two big manufacturing facilities in the UK that I know of. Renfrew's got a place there. And then we've got in Sheffield, we had the old Davy Markham site.
Yes.
Big crane is, you know, 400, 500 ton crane. The big pit, you could assemble things. You could at least do the first few in Sheffield and then perhaps go to the outer regions of Sheffield and build a purpose-built plant. But I think, you know, building small modular reactors, so if you want 24 gig by 2050, that's the ambition.
Mm.
You need to start moving on it.
And, yeah.
Again, that's another thing I'd say for politicians. If we need an industrial strategy, you know, we need to think about when we're going to do things in nuclear and make some decisions.
Yeah.
If we don't, we could get overtaken by technologies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As you say, energy security, it's important. It matters to all of us. So fingers crossed, we'll see that unfold in a positive way. So Keith, it's been a fantastic discussion today. It's been a, you know, really exciting hearing about all the things you've been involved in and getting your view on what's important in UK manufacturing. So thanks for joining me on the show. Hope you've enjoyed our discussion.
Yeah, good. I always enjoy talking about manufacturing.
Absolutely. So thanks again to Keith Ridgway from the University of Strathclyde. Thank you for listening. See you next time on Insights for Manufacturing.